the wand, a puff of smoke, and the magic man pulls one out of the hat.
I still can't believe it happened.
Welcome to the Mirror's Magic Supercoach podcast, following round 24 weeks to go. With me to talk about it, the man who's flying home. Jeez, top 10, Tommy. We're not ruling out top 10, are we? Tommy McGregor, how are you, mate?
Good, mate. I reckon I'm comfortably ruling out top 10, but I'll take a top 100 finish from here. Good couple of weeks for me on the back of a bit of luck and also some of those trade-ins that I've done late working out. So very home strong. And I think I'm 9 points behind you. So it's going to be a tight finish on the way home. And with the trade up my sleeve, hopefully there is no injuries. But if there is one, I'm a little bit covered. And you've got the cover there sitting on the bench. So both in pretty good spot.
Yeah, not covered just yet. If Tom Green comes up this week, I'll have cover. But you say luck, you also had some bad luck. We'll speak about that in a minute with your looping and emergencies and some strategies around there, because this time of year, obviously thanks everyone for the support throughout the year and tuning in, but there is not much to discuss outside of captain options and looping. And then luxury trades, which I believe we're probably 1 week away if you've got one trade left up your sleeve to use. But yeah, just in terms of your rank coming in, you're in a great spot considering you've still got a trade up your sleeve. Just have you got your season ranks up ahead of you? I've just got mine. So yeah, as you said, I think 9 points difference, which is crazy considering we've got, I know we do speak a lot on the topic, but we've also got a very different side. Like, I think in defence, we'll have three different premium defenders, midfield probably two or three, and one different forward, and 9 points difference is a pretty remarkable. And if we can both get, I'm less confident with my lack of trade, but if we can both finish with the top 100, it'd be a pretty nice feat. My rankings, I think I was ranked 12,000th after round one. We'll go through a few learnings and trades and good trades, bad trades, sideways trades, how we could have saved trades in a bit. So I was 12,000th. Then I went out to 15,000th after round four, and from there steadily came in. So 6,000th, 1,000th, hovered around that 1,000 mark for a while before I hit the 600 mark, then 300 just after the buys to 200 to 160 to 140 to now 129 from the weekend where I scored a 2.680, which again, yeah, got me from 141 to 129. So if that trend stays, hopefully I'll be with you with a top 100, but there's certainly some strong teams sitting up the top. How's your ranking going for the year?
Yeah, look, it's a pretty similar story, really. So I started 31,000, 23 the week after and 30 the week after, so I didn't really make any ground early, and then I sort of quickly made some ground. So I went 19.7 into 5, and then I kind of just tickled that at the top 1,000, 1,500th, bouncing back between up until really round 14, where I sort of came into the top 1,000. And then I think that's kind of that point where we're fully primo post the bias around 15. And I think that's kind of, you know, we were talking about it a lot around that time, that that's the place that you're making those upgrades and you want to be really getting those best 22 players, because people are going to be light on trades. You want to be coming home really strong with those players that are going to put the most points on the board. And I think I did that. And when we sort of look at those ranks, I think another thing that I did was that I slipped up last year doing was making sure that I was bringing in those players that were elite or trying to, and not really settling. So if that meant waiting an extra week, letting a rookie fatten up a little bit more, I did that, which didn't pay, rewards at the time, but it certainly has on the way home, because I've got a pretty good 22 I'm rolling out each week.
No, it's a great learning, and it shows after two big years in a row, you still took some learnings from the year after, which, as you said, you did settle on what you did, potential top best 22, but not the best 22. And it's certainly a learning for those who've come from the fantasy game, where the different phases of the season, I like to say, you start off with value premiums, you then and mid prices, you then target discounted premiums for that mid point where you just want to get rookies off the field. It doesn't matter if they're not best 22 premiums, you just want to get premiums on, so then you have a bit of a floor there, and then you've got enough trades to then get up to the best 22 in that final phase of the year. Supercoach, you haven't got the trades for that. It's that middle phase of targeting, yes, discounted premiums, like a Zach Merritt was a great one for those who jumped on him, but you don't want to settle for someone who's not going to be complete best. And I obviously advocated hard for coaches with trade to get someone like a Callum Mills, who obviously wasn't a top eight at the time, but I thought was value. And those who have opted that way are just giving up 40 points per week to those who have a Libber or a Petraka or one of the top dogs there. So that's certainly a big takeaway. And you've played that almost to a T. In terms of your trade, so you've got one left. We'll talk about trades you've made so far, but more just live and looking forward. When do you expect, barring any injuries, to pull the trigger on that trade?
I'll think about it next week, I think. But it's probably 2 weeks to go. Like, where I sit at the moment, I'm in a couple of cashies as well, which I've got a side eye towards. It's definitely not my focus every year, but given the 50Ks out of reach for me, I think holding that trade is also, you know, gonna benefit me there. But I'll probably look at around, you know, I'll definitely pull the trigger with 2 rounds to go, I reckon, and I'll have a look at it next week. But I just think there's no one. When I sort of look at my side, you know, when you look at the Days, the Sheasel, they're putting up decent, good scores. There's no one that's really, you know, that underperformer. It could be a Taranto, but there's not really any forwards that I'd want to jump on in terms of those that are out of form. So for me, I think it's, yeah, two rounds to go, and we'll sort of just see how it plays out. But I think for me, it's still firmly an injury trade.
Yeah, and the fact your rank keeps going up shows that your core team is better than the cohort. So you'd be silly to, even though you, someone like a Taranto is underperforming and highly owned, it's not like you need to get rid of him to make a dent. If you continue on your path, you're going well. If you had your time again 2 weeks ago, Marshall to Gawn, was that straight swap, same price, knowing Gawn's even got that Swans matchup to finish off the season? I know it's easy to say now because we've had 2 weeks in a row of no forced trades. Touch wood, we're recording this on Tuesday night pre-teams, but does part of you wish you did that move to a Max Gawn?
Yeah, 100%. Hindsight, definitely 2020, you know. But where I sit right now, I think it was probably the right move for sure. He's put a fair, you know, a pretty significant dent into Marshall, even though Marshall hasn't been all that bad. I think it was the right move. I think we said at the time, if I had two trades, I definitely would have done it. And with the one in hindsight, I probably should have pulled the trigger, but still 4 weeks to go. If we get that injury this week or even next week, that could be eroded quite quickly, especially, you know, depending on the rookies that get named in the forward line. So obviously I'd have to swing Cameron up for cover. So the jury's not out, but if I could go back in time, I reckon I'd do it and try and really shore up that sort of even maybe a top 50 spot if I did that move.
Yeah, 170 is last three. Obviously, I don't think we're going to jump on first up versus the big O. It was more post that 200 score, so you would have got I think a 120 than the 170. But you're right. Obviously, that's been the advice, and I've had a bit wrong this year, to be honest with you, with the Fifes and the Mills and a few other ones. But that one was that if you were running anyone of a Briggs nature or a Sean Darcy or anyone who wasn't the top two rucks, then we were said, oh, you're prepared to go down to zero trades to make that move. But you'd be no point trading a Marshall to get down to zero. But if you have two trades left and you do it straight swap to keep one, do Marshall. So hopefully a few jumped on the end of that and are riding some of this big scoring max to come. Back on looking back at the season before we get into each position like we normally do for those who are contemplating making trades and moves this week. So one trade left. We had one extra trade this year than last year, which was more than ever before, and we've all needed them. Looking back at your trades, are there... Have you sideways traded some premiums, which you're looking back you didn't have to do to potentially have more trades up your sleeve, or you think you needed every bit of those 36 trades, I think it was, this year to get to where you are?
I certainly needed every little bit of them. I think when I look back at my trades, the ones where they've been sideways, they've been, you know, pretty clear moves. I think when round three, when I was sort of wanting to shore up my team, Steele got injured. Sean Darcy, I think, got injured as well. So I moved on them too, brought in English, Zeeble and Dacos. So those premiums that I've sort of moved on have always been injury trades. So no sidewaysing, but I've certainly needed every single one of them. I think I did a count before, and I traded out 8 primos along the way, forced or otherwise. 9 if you count Zeeble. So, you know, that's now we're down to what, 26 trades, just for upgrades, to upgrade half your team. So that's most of them. So, you know, even though we've got a lot, it's still cutting it pretty fine. To be honest, I think with the introduction of the sub, that also, you know, it's going to impact the amount of points and the amount of scoring that's going to go around, especially with those rookies and cash gen players. So I think it's probably the right amount, and I certainly used every single one of them to get to where I am.
Yeah, tell you what, we'd be in some strife if we're back in what would have been 2018, 2017, when there might have been 30 trades max, and even before then when there were 24 for the season. Because looking back at mine, most of mine have been forced, albeit they weren't long-termers. But round 2, I traded out after round 1, Josh Kelly concussion, even though he was only out for 2 weeks. I had Cherry, who was out for a good chunk of the season, so needed some cash to get up to English. So they were that's one premium trade, Josh Kelly. Then round 3 was a sideways trade of a premium, but again, we'll go through this at the end of the year. This is, I think, definitely the right move, which was a fully priced player who I was still bullish on, being Jack McRae. And to be fair, he's under-delivered from what I expected him to do even once I traded him out. I would have been fine with him still going 110s, just that I had, or we were dealt a Dacos at 500k who was doing 120s, and a Jack Zeeble at 350 who was doing 110s, and you just had to jump on those. And sometimes you have to make sacrifices, and the risk of starting all these value players is that if it doesn't pay off, it costs you multiple trades to get off them. But I think a good play with these extra trades is to start with players who you think potentially going to be best 22, knowing you can trade down to it. So I was able to trade a McRae, Radiglia and a Chessa and walk away with Dacos and Zeeble there. So I was okay with that sideways trade. And then that, yeah, all injuries like yours and pretty much similar players to you. So Doherty round 5, forced trade premium. Ridley round 9, forced trade premium. Hopper, if you want to call him a premium, round 10, forced trade. Clayton Oliver, which I think me and you both owned him only for the 1 week, and then bang, gone. But we did well getting rid of him straight away and not having to wait. And then, oh, Rosie was the other sideways trade I did throughout the buys, but I got him back in late in the year, thank God, over a McRae. So we'll document all our trades for the season at the end of the year and send out a bit of a season wrap for learnings that for future years, because the game certainly is changing and I'm continuing to try to learn myself. Speaking of learning, looping. So the difference between a captain score and a good one and a bad one is the difference between 5,000 weekly ranks and some at the moment, and at the top end, difference between probably 50 points overall rankings. I had a Bontempelli captain on the weekend, so that stagnated a bit of my growth. I think if I was certainly on a Tim English train, you might have seen more top 100 areas. Talk to me about what you did throughout, the learning you found with your looping. You still walked away with an okay captain in Josh Dunkley, but for those who are new to Supercoach, new to rolling lockouts, advice for those trying to loop?
Yeah, look, it was a bit of a schmozzle. I'm going to blame, I said on Twitter that I blamed Optimizer. I didn't use Optimizer, but I'd sort of the week prior, I'd just, you know, filled out my emergencies just because I didn't need them to loophole. And then I think it was just like I had a pretty busy week at work, to be honest, and didn't really have time, looked at my side, set it up, but really didn't pay much attention to my bench. And I had an emergency on all players. And I didn't really look at the fixture too much either coming into the Saturday. I knew the VC was English. I was watching the game half time and I'm thinking, you absolute beauty.
He's on 110, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's on 110. I'm like, you absolute beauty. I'll go into the app and set up my loopholes because, you know, there's no way he's scoring less than 20 points and I'm taking whatever he gets out of that last half. So went to go do that and realised that all my rookies were locked out. So couldn't take it. Tried a few different things, went and got desperate, went and logged onto the computer instead of the app and thought maybe something will be different there, but it wasn't. Pretty disappointing. And I guess luckily for me, the English slowed down. And then obviously I put the captain on Dunkley, and there was a lot of other I guess, poorer scores around. I was really looking at the Sicily option, who only went 102. That was probably the other player that I was going to jump on. So you definitely take the 133 from Dunks. I think he had a 60-point third quarter. So, yeah, for me, it's just about, you know, when I'm playing around with my team, because I do it all week, maybe making sure that I'm properly set up for how I want it to roll, because I didn't. And went to bed on Friday night, had a good night's sleep, and just didn't even think about it, just assumed I'd done the right thing. So I think just making sure, having a look at the fixtures, making sure that loop set up ready to go, just because it wasn't. I think, you know, in my head, I was like, yeah, English is going to be the right go. Do the Marshall Madden loophole that I do every single week, but without really thinking that the Doggies were coming up against the Giants. So just got to be more aware. I think I got pretty lucky that I had Dunkley to fall back on, and he put up a good score. So not complaining too much. I think it's only about 10 spots in the rankings or 15 spots in the rankings at 30 points. So not the end of the world, but something I'm not going to let happen to me in the last four rounds.
Well, gave me a spot, to be honest with you, because he would have overtaken me. So my 129, which looks pretty nice, in the 120s would have gone to 130 if you had done that. Tell you what, you mentioned Optimizer. You'd pay $50 if there was a button which said Optimizer, which automatically looked at the schedules, set up all your loops for you, did the emergency on whoever was playing first, benched the rest. Imagine that. Just press the button. It's all set up for you. I hate looping. But with that, so did any part of you, and this would have been a silly thing to do, but consider using your last trade to trade in a donut?
There was a moment there that it crossed my mind, and I went back on that pretty quickly. He would have had to go 250 for me to even consider that. But yeah, no, that wasn't something that I was going to look at. So yeah, no, look, at the end of the day, like, that's the swings and roundabouts of Supercoach, I think, in terms of the scoring. And we'll obviously go through it more at the end of the season in terms of where we've come from. But we both went through where we started in terms of ranks. I had a look at all my trade-ins and my trade-outs and sort of where my starting team sat. Like, I got six clear picks wrong in my starting team. I've done, you know, multiple trade-outs that, you know, and trade-ins that weren't the right moves. You know, Steele's seen my side three times, and he's out of it right now, right when he's in some really good form. Moved him on just before he started scoring well. You know, Took came in, Took came out, Oliver came in, Oliver came out, and I'm sitting just outside the top 100. So not everything needs to go right, and, you know, for me, a fair bit's gone wrong. But obviously I've had some luck along the way as well, but you don't have to get everything right. And I think, you know, just try and not get too hung up on decisions like that and things that go wrong, because they go wrong for everybody, and you're going to get your turn eventually. So now, water off a duck's back, and I think the number one thing you got to do in this game is try not to make emotional decisions, not make emotional trades, because they're the ones that hurt you. Because you move off a player that is out of form but has the potential, and they come back and hurt you, like a steal. But it's gotten a lot of people over the course of the season. It's probably something that hasn't hurt me at all this year, because I've tried to make informed decisions and not emotional ones.
Mate, you've summed that up perfectly. I'm glad I clicked record there. I reckon the last time you did a beautiful monologue like that was in the preseason. I forgot we didn't press record. So
they're butchered it on the rego.
That's spot on about the emotional decisions, about not beating yourself up if you make the wrong ones, because we all make wrong ones. And there was every chance Jack Steele was going to go out, and whether Ross Lyon was going to give him 3 weeks off to get his body right for potentially finals push, or vice versa. Like, not every year at all aligns, and when it does, you go well. And obviously, with all those stories you've had, shows you're seeing them well, and your overall philosophies are spot on. One more thing about this looping. So this is what I don't do. Those around the top, I see a few of them do it, and whether you think it's necessary. But say my forward line, I've got Roberts, who's not playing, Red Dot on the bench, and Ryan Marrick, who's barely scoring. Mind you, got a few nice 50s recently, sitting on the bench. And my forward line's all pretty good with a Darcy Cameron. Darcy Cameron plays Friday night. I just have him on the field because he's my premium. Does any part of you ever put him on the bench and Roberts on the field, emergency Cameron, just in case there's that early game injury, that in which case you can swing Marrick on, or that's just getting a bit too high maintenance with your team?
Too high maintenance for me, to be honest. Like that it's, I think, you know, like obviously the 23rd player is a really good move if you can get up to like an Uber Primo, and it's going to be make your decision making pretty easy, I think. In the similar vein, the reason I don't like that, especially if you're getting up to that 420k player that might be able to get 100 but might also put up an 85, I think that's getting a little bit too cute, and it can certainly backfire on you if you get another laid out. And that certainly happened before. It's happened multiple times. You know, you go back early in the season, LDU comes out 5 minutes before the game with an Achilles. That can happen to anyone. People get injured in the warm-up, not all the time, but it certainly happens. And I think trying to play those kind of moves is just a little bit too high maintenance for me. You've got to be on top of your phone the entire weekend to make sure you're across the news. And I think you just wear, you know, like obviously that provides you a little bit of cover and you can do the swings and stuff. But for me, that's something that I think you're just overplaying it a little bit too much. It might result in points, but you know, you miss a lockout, you know, you get a phone call from your mum or you're outside doing the garden and you miss a lockout, it could all go wrong as well.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I'm with you, so I don't do it. You've obviously finished top 10 twice. I was top 10 last year. So those who think, oh, to compete, you have to do all this sort of, like I've tried my best and it's only natural you do get addicted to this game. I've tried to be less consumed this year, watching a bit less footy. Naturally, that happens with two young kids, but stuff like that, I think, is too. And then you're right. Like, if there was a laid out, those extra, say, 30 points I might get if Cameron does a first quarter injury and I might get a 50 instead of his 30, you're going to give them back if there's a laid out. So you're better off having that emergency. I just know, even round one, so I had the Cherry early injury. And because a lot of people had the Madden R3, who wasn't playing anyway, and Cherry played before Madden, I saw people have Cherry as emergency first week and then have Madden on the on field, and then when Cherry went down, they could either adjust their moves and maybe went a premium down to a mid-pricer to have the funds to get Cherry up again, because you could kind of play in advance, or maybe trade in another ruckman in the ruck line and not have Madden there to get the extra points rather than that the injuries. There's all that little mucking around, which there's certainly merit to, but don't feel like you have to play that level to be good at this game. Typically, you just, as you've always said, if you follow these philosophies and value early in the season and upgrade and be smart with your upgrades and play the things in your favour, typically you'll have a good season. So let's get into the current state of play in each position. We've talked about it enough. The insights have it enough. A couple of things to highlight, though. Nick Dacos, potential tag this week. He comes up against Hawthorn, where Finn McGuinness did that tag in the preseason. It was enough to scare a lot of coaches, including myself, from starting with him, even though it was talked at the time he's not getting Finn until round 21. Well, round 21's here. He's getting the Finn matchup, or is he? So the risk of, I doubt no one's going to trade him out. I don't even advocate anyone who's wants to take a bit of a punt to take him to trade him out, because we saw Jack Sinclair get completely blanketed by Finn in the first quarter last week, and then the tag got pulled off and then away he went. Same the week before, or 2 weeks before, against North Melbourne. I think Finn went through tagged three different players. So you'd hate to move off Dacos. I think it's certainly worth not putting in vice captain or captain on him, but I wouldn't be trading him out. Sicily, he obviously has cotton on that the tag works against Hawthorn and against him. If Ross did it, who was giving up the most points to any team to defenders, and he decided to lock down on a defender, it means that coaches are onto it. So that's something, again, to watch for captain, vice captain. Then again, Sisley, I think he's got pretty handy matchups coming on the way home, who won't tag, being a Collingwood, who you very much doubt that tag. I think he'll do pretty well. We've spoken about him enough, and it's probably frustrating for people because we haven't got trades to get him. He still remains in 11% of the top 1,000, but Dan Houston just did it again, 122, 139. He's going in his last three, 132. His last five to be the number one defender at such low ownership. So another point of difference if you have that one. As you mentioned, those lower end premiums, whether it was a Sinclair, a Sheezer, or Will Day, even my boy Bailey Dale Jake Lloyd put up some pretty nice scores, which makes people happy. Caleb Daniel, the concern, 35. I can't believe how low that score is. And would have hurt given his low ownership. But just, yeah, the Bevo factor. Where's he going to play? What's his role week to week? And that's why when you're training in prems, particularly back end of the year, you want to be certain about what role they're going to play.
Yeah, I think a learning for next year is if Bevo's still at the Doggies, which is starting to be a fair bit of ground for him not to be, I think, among his supporter base. It's probably, you know, there's a couple players where their role's golden. You can take them, and, you know, I think that's probably a Bont and an English and probably a Liver, I think, because he can't play anywhere else. But I think in terms of his age, you know, he might be sort of above that risk threshold. I won't be looking anywhere else in terms of that team, I don't think, unless there's a genuine cash cow. So, yeah, I think what he's doing to Daniel, I think I put him in the top six a few weeks back just based on what he was doing, given his role in his scoring and the way he was playing within that team. And, yeah, he gets thrown around. And without that continuity, we're seeing what it's done to McRae. Those players just aren't going to be able to put up consistent scores, which is what you need. That's brutal for owners, and I know a lot of people jumped on, which is very unlucky.
Mate, he was going 130s for good stretches in that middle period. Obviously, when Richards, Johannesson were out, Treloar was out, Baz was out for a bit, and he was crazy. And I'm glad a bit of spotlight's gone on Bevo, because every time you mention people, like, well, he won a flag in his second year coaching or whatever, but you've got Libis, you're watching him closely, and what his output is and his clearance numbers. Bontempelli, we're all in awe of him. Tim English, like, there's every chance they're going to have the All-Australian Ruckman, All-Australian Ruck Rover and Rover, and no certain even for finals or underperforming what they're doing. So I'm glad the spotlight's gone on Bevo, and no consistency in the team performances because there's no consistency in the roles. Who knows where they're playing week to week. Midfield, we saw some nice big scores come up. Parrish has underwhelmed the last couple of weeks, but he's got a nice couple of matchups coming up. So those who jumped on, he's still in my top eight. He's still in my team. West Coast and North next two. I hope he'll start putting up some big scores. Lachie Neal tag worked well on him. Luckily, he leads a comp in clearances. He's got such a good super coach game to him that his floor's still he got smashes. I think his fantasy scored 60 and an 87 super coach is quite appealing. It just, the question is, does team still tag? Freo barely tagged all year, so I'm not sure if they'll tag him, but the blueprint's there. He's probably going to be avoided from my captain, vice captain on the run home. And then the other lesson is just, yeah, looking at, you'll see the insights, my top eight and then those below and just the low scores of those below, whether it's a Josh Kelly 98, Took Miller 106, Mills 50. There's a reason why you want to be shooting up to those top end guys. Rucks, we spoke about. I still think, well, I doubt anyone's going to be able to do a straight swap now to Max Gawn with that price point. And it's probably not worth now going to zero trades to get him. That was, if you're going to do it, it's probably a bit too late for that.
Not for me, yeah. Nah, I think, yeah. I don't know who would have that cash sitting around.
And then forward line, as you said, everyone's delivering except for Toronto. 88, his last five. He's never been that good super coacher. He's always been a better fantasy than super coach, given his low effectiveness with his kicking. And it's, or he's returning a bit to the mean. It's not like he's getting attention or tagged. So could have been a real masterstroke if anyone wanted to be brave enough to pull the trigger in his buy round. But that's more of an AFL fantasy move, not a super coach, where he was, I think he was, wasn't just the top forward in the comp. I think he was at the top four total points in the comp. Those pressing, Darcy Cameron's impressed us all. Still cheap if you are trying to find a replacement. Jack McRae, yes, that score looks good. They've got a good run home with not playing anyone in the top eight. But again, what's Bevo going to do week to week? So I think you're right. If you've got trades up your sleeve, you're better off, rather than doing these little small upgrades like we said the last couple of weeks, you're better off waiting for 2 weeks to go. And you're probably, no one wants injuries in Supercoach, but it wouldn't be the worst thing if someone gets rested for a week or two, a popular player, and you can jump 100, 200 points on those without trades. As always, Tommy, captain, vice captain, how are you currently looking up for this week?
It looks like a pretty simple week for me, to be honest. I think on the Friday night, I'm just going to back in Tim the English. Again, I guess the other one that's probably going to be a popular pick on the Friday night is the Bont. But just going back through his scores, he's got too many scores that you kind of have to take without being high-ceiling games. You know, really just the 131 against Sydney over the last 5 weeks that you'd be happy with. And then even going back all the way to round nine, there's only another score in there that you'd be really happy with. So avoiding the Bont, I know he was probably the most popular on the weekend. Go English against Solder. I'm not sure. Is Nate back? He probably, what did he miss, three?
Yeah, Nate should be back, yeah, which will be interesting because Nate used to give up a lot. And
yeah,
at halftime of the Tigers, because Nate Solder's in great form himself. He scored a 128, gone at 111 in those three games, which big Nakes missed. And Solder had him covered. At least he's getting more hit-outs than him for the first quarter and a half before Max really turned it on in the second half. So against Nate would probably be a better result, I think, for Tim English.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll be looking at the English. I think I'm just having a look across the rest of the teams and the games. I don't know, there's not really anyone that I'm super enamored with. And then I think I'll stick the big C on Zachary Merritt coming up against West Coast at Marvel Stadium. You know, I can't see them having any desire to tag or any desire to really win another game for the year, given that they knocked off North on the weekend. They want that number one pick. So I could see Merritt going pretty large, and I think he'll wear the armband for me.
Yeah, it'd be nice to get it all over and done with. By the Saturday morning, you won't have to scramble for people not playing. I think you're spot on. So West Coast obviously had that win for supporters, members, young players, sing the song, take a bit of pressure off. But yeah, win one more, they lose that draft pick. It'd be a shocking. And the fact they decided not to tag LDU, who is by far and away their best player, I doubt they're going to tag Zach Merritt. So I could potentially go unique with a Parrish in that instance, but probably not. I think it's straight bat from here and try to get as close to that top 100 as possible for me. So I'll be with you with an English who you always have concerns about his hit-outs against these bigger ruckmen, but he seems to score fine even when he gets beaten in the ruck. And then when he does win the ruck, he can put up these high monster scores he's been doing. So I'll be the same English into Merritt.
I think what works in English's favour is he can lose the hit-outs, but he's very crafty with his tap work. I haven't seen the stats, but I would assume that he, in terms of hit-outs won, he'd have a high percentage hit-out to advantage. I think there was a lot of complaining around Briggs' score on the weekend, but he was just slapping it forward without really any purpose. And I think he had like something like 28 hit-outs or something along those lines, but only six were to advantage, where Timmy English had a really high percentage. So it obviously helps that he's hitting them down to Liver and Bont and McRae and Barry Smith and those really clean midfielders, but at the same time, that helps him have that really high ceiling. The only other play that I've sort of considered is chucking it on Merritt. I think English will probably be the most popular pick, obviously, if English underperforms. We did this a few weeks ago and it worked out. English underperforms, then you can chuck your VC on Merritt and then have a look at a different option later in the week. I think that's another really good play at it and trying to differentiate yourself from the competition, because I'd probably say Zachy's probably going to be the higher scorer, I think, if I had to, but not by much. And I think they're the best two options, so I'm not going to try and be too brave about it.
Yeah, I like that second strategy of yours, and always say that we get two cracks at it. And when I was good at fantasy, we didn't have two cracks at it. It was fixed lockout. But essentially, it should be you should put the VC on who you think's going to score the most. And then if they don't score what you want, you then have a second crack at it. Even though it might be a worse option, your second crack, you've got a good full look at the player you think's going to score the most. The only thing is, it kind of goes against that theory, is you look at who's coming from there. And you've got Jordan Dawson playing. Oh, they play the same time anyway. You wouldn't be able to do it. But he's likely to get the Tuke Miller tag. You'd think how well it worked on the weekend against Lachie Neal. You've got Dacos, who will likely get the Finn Callahan tag. You've then got the Port Adelaide boys against Geelong, who typically are hard to score against. We saw Merritt have that poor game a couple of weeks ago. Lachie Neal as well. They don't get much of the ball themselves. And I know Brayshaw was good on the weekend, as was Sarong, but if they want to put some pressure on, being a Atkins or O'Connor, they can be pretty defensive. Then you get to the GWS Swans game. No one really there. Melbourne, Petrarca versus North Melbourne would probably be the fallback for those with Petrarca. That probably sums it up, but I haven't really got anyone else. And then Lachie Neale, but I don't trust him after showing the stats. I think they've won two of their last eight encounters when Lachie Neale's been tagged, and they were against pretty easy beats. So, which is why I'm going the first game into the second game. But yeah, Petrarca owners should really consider Merritt into Petrarca.
I am an owner, and I will strongly consider. I think the other one's also Dunks against Freo. Freo, just in terms of the Supercoach rankings, are 16th for giving up points to midfielders. So certainly an opportunity for him to put up big scores, which we know he can do.
That's a good point, too. That is a good. He's just a. He's a genius. He's sorted out the game, hasn't he? He tackles well. He gets contested footy. When he gets the ball, he gets the easy, cheap mark, and then he doesn't try to be too cute with it and get turnovers. He just kicks at his 45, 50 metres, gets the effective kick and bobs up every now and then to just have that very high floor and high ceiling. So, yeah, that is something to consider, especially if I can't split Bonton and Timmy. But as always, I'll put my final thoughts in the trade insights. Thanks again for your work, Tommy. We've got a few coaches peppering around the top 10, which is great. As I said last week, we've got about 100 members, which I think a few of them would have dropped off throughout the year as well. So it's great to have a few punching up towards the top end. Hope you've all enjoyed the year so far. We'll touch base at the following this weekend, next week with you, Tommy. But thanks again for all your help.
All right, cheers, mate. Good luck, everyone. Magic.